He's a man that believes any caliber that starts with a 4 is a good self-defense caliber. And he's a man from Washington, but not of Washington. He's my friend, Sam Clovis.
All right. Okay, so everybody can hear me? I know you can all see me. Vertically challenged, horizontally gifted. It's one of the great things about Washington, D.C. is the best part of it is being not there. I tell everybody that my time in Washington, I feel like I received a sentence to a federal minimum security prison, and about every 6 weeks I get to come out for a conjugal visit. So my wife still finds me as a person of interest most of the time. It just dawned on me, I don't know why it took me this long to figure it out, maybe it's my age and a selective memory, I guess. But I have lived out of a suitcase for 4.5 of the last 5 years. I have reflect back on my personal soiree into politics. And I still think that it has to be an Iowa phenomenon that a person could lose 2 elections and have their political stock go up. I mean, it's just stunning to me that anybody would give a crap about what I think about anything. And so as time has gone on, I've had the opportunity to do some things that in a lifetime I don't think people can fully appreciate, and I certainly still don't appreciate the magnitude of what we have accomplished in this country in the last 5 years. It's an experience of a lifetime, and I mean, I have personal stories that I could reflect and tell you about, but I'm here with friends today. This is, I told Ernie's only been after me for a year to get me here, and it took about a year to get permission to speak in public. I couldn't get my butt off of television for about a year and a half, and then suddenly when I went into the government, we had pretty much an embargo on talking to the press, and I see friends here today, and so... So I will be careful in what I say if my friends from the press were not here. I have very few friends in the press, by the way. I am so tired of being dragged through a knothole by the Washington Post and the New York Times. And in fact, I feel slighted if I go a week without my name being mentioned prominently in something. In fact, I'm surprised you didn't play the Russian national anthem when I came up here. Because that seems to be the central focus of most what everybody thinks, is that, and I openly admit, I was right in the middle of it. I recruited all those people, and we went through that process, and the surprising aspect of all of this is, and I have to be careful what I say, is that when there's nothing there, folks, there's nothing there, and what is so shocking, and this is really the crux of that whole issue, and I won't dwell on this at all. What is so shocking about all of this is that I cannot believe so many people can get so much wrong so much of the time. It is stunning how incredibly convoluted that whole narrative has become and how totally inaccurate it has been presented in the press. And I'm not at liberty to do that because of our own legal obligations and everything. And it has been really tough for those of us that have been involved. It has cost us reputation, it's cost us money, and it is it's been an incredible burden, some for more than others. I mean, I have been really less affected than a lot of other people have, but it has still been very difficult. It cost me my appointment as an undersecretary in the Department of Agriculture, and I'm not bitter about that. I'm not resentful. I understand how things work. But I just wish one of these days they could get the story right. And it's like the great Lane is, it says, well, you know, the person gets exonerated in court, and the response is, well, how do you feel about that? He said, well, how do I get my life back? How do I get my reputation back? Those are the things that I think are the most troubling, because these are good people who have done good things for this country, and yet the narrative, that's not the narrative we're hearing. So I'm really here to talk and open and answer your questions about what's gone on. I will say that, as many of you know, just to review the bidding, Trump campaign, national co-chair, chief policy advisor, built coalitions after the convention, helped get the vote out, do a lot of other things like that. Went into transition, was a policy director for transition. I was the person that had the final approval of all of the department action plans, 46 of those that we processed in that short period of time from election day to inauguration day. About 36 hours before inauguration, I was going to be on in the war room to help with the bed down of all the new administration. About 36 hours before that, I was asked to lead the team in agriculture. And so I took 43 people into the Department of Agriculture on inauguration day. We swore our oaths of office. And as they say, the rest has been history. This has been one of the most remarkable experiences of my life, a life-changing experience. And most of it because of the tens of thousands of people I had the opportunity to meet, the chance to participate in something significant in history. And I will tell you, one of the greatest experiences of my life is being personally involved in getting a person elected president of the United States. We call that a non-trivial event. I can talk about agriculture. I know a lot about that. I know a fair amount about the government, what's going on. There are a lot of issues ongoing, and I know you have a lot of questions. And I would prefer to answer your questions as opposed to me to continue to stand up here and tell you stories. I haven't been here very much. I will say, the two questions that I get asked most often, and this is the truth, is what's it like to fly on the Trump airplane? It does not suck. And is Donald Trump as smart as he says he is? Yes. He's one of the most intelligent men I've ever had the pleasure of being around. And he's funny, and he's exciting, and he's you know, there are days he's like a well-struck three wood in a tile bathroom, but there are others that, you know, for me, I never had a moment where I doubted his sincerity. I never had a moment when I've doubted his intention, and he is an easy man to read once you get to know him. And I don't know why anybody in this country is surprised that he's doing exactly what he said he was going to do. What a refreshing change that is over the last 50 years of our history. Okay, question, yes, sir.
What are you doing now that you've withdrawn your nomination for Undersecretary of Agriculture?
Nothing really changed. I was a senior White House advisor to the Department of Agriculture. I am essentially the troubleshooter for the secretary in the White House, in the department. The department's big, 110,000 people. We've done a major reorganization. I've been deeply involved in helping the Forest Service with their transition. I'm right now working with the National Natural Resources Conservation Service, about 10,000 employees. They do all of the voluntary conservation programs in the country. So I've been helping them in their transition from one sub-agency to another. A lot of that's where my business consulting background has really come into play. I work on it. I'm the political lead on invasive species. I've been helping with the opioid crisis as an advisor, helped with the rural prosperity task force issues. So those are the kinds of things I do. Frankly, what I do is that whatever nobody else will do comes to my desk. So, and wherever there are trouble spots, that's where the secretary sends me. A lot of it is because I'm an old guy, I have a lot of experience, and we have built a tremendous amount of credibility with our career people in the department. They have embraced us, and we likewise them. And so it's been a remarkable experience to get to work with truly, truly dedicated public servants. And these people, the other part of this is when you bring a little leadership into government, it is amazing what can happen. We have people who, for the first time in 20 years, feel enriched and empowered. And we're moving mountains in the department. Just on the regulatory aspect, we made the promise that we would get rid of two regulations for every one we wrote. Well, in agriculture, we're running 13 to 1. Yeah. It would be more if we could find more shredders. So it would. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
What's your view of the Justice Department? Are they heavily, I don't know if you can answer this or not.
I won't answer it, but that's okay.
I'm just curious about, is the deep state as deep as it looks like it is?
I would say that I will answer that. I won't answer anything about the Justice Department. The deep state, and that's what we call the administrative state, is very real. It's very real. But I will also say that the one thing we have found, that if we come in there, and we have, almost across the board in all of our departments, we brought some incredibly good people into this administration, and we have found there are some places where we have resistance. As you can imagine, most of the people, and just give you an example, there'd be natural resistance to a conservative agenda at the EPA. There'd be natural resistance. Because over the last 40 years, the EPA has been built upon and brought in a lot of people who are true believers on the don't do anything, don't change anything. So we've really brought in some things. But I think we have shocked some people as well. I'll just give you an example. I'll just put it this way. I don't see the deep state. I don't see it as deep in the Department of Agriculture. And maybe that's because agriculture is less political than almost any other department. The issues we run into at the VA are not deep state issues. They're issues associated with the labor force and how the labor force is constructed. And 350,000 employees and 270,000 are in public unions. So they have all the collective bargaining issues that are there, which is unusual. I mean, that's unusual. They also have 168 major enterprises in the VA. DOD, 700,000 employees. It's a big organization. DHS, big organization, very diverse portfolio. So you run into these pockets, but by and large, if you bring leadership into an organization, and particularly government, you'd be amazed what happens. And what we are experiencing at agriculture has been there for that. We have run into very little of this deep state issue. And the example I'll give you, we got there, and one of the very first things happened in the Department of Agriculture was an email went out from our Agricultural Research Service, ARS. It's 1,000 scientists. It's more than that, I think. But it's the main research body of agriculture. And they went out and they put out, said, well, can't send anything out. You can't publish any papers. You can't do anything without the approval of the administration. We never put out that. You did. We never put that out. We never said that to anybody. But somebody assumed that because we were conservatives and Republicans, that we were going to put a cork in all the science, that we were the Luddites and troglodytes that lived under the bridge, that were anti-intellectual, anti-science, you know, all these things. And in fact, it's been just the opposite. Every time we go into a meeting, we demand the best science and the best data. We demand it. We haven't cut back on any of the climate hubs at agriculture. In fact, we're expanding their portfolios. We're doing more on soil and water research than any administration has in the last 30 years. It's blown them away. I mean, so, well, why? Because it's good business. Clean water, clean air, good soil. It's good business. So why wouldn't we do that? So that's the thing that we're finding, is a lot of the stereotypes that people had of the Trump administration have been blown to pieces in how we've operated inside government. So the deep state, yes, it is there. Yes, it is. I am a victim of that when it comes to some of these other issues. But that has to do more with elected officials than it does with the career people. Yes, sir. Right. Ricardo. Ricardo. Swear to God. That's an honest answer. That's
an honest question.
Yeah.
Why is Congress so feckless that they cannot get documents immediately? You know, you can go, the FBI can raid somebody's lawyer immediately. Why does it take so long? I mean, that's what people are frustrated about.
I think you'd have to get your elected officials in here to answer that. I am simply an appointed person that the have a presidential appointment.
It's not good.
Well, but again, I don't want to get into that, so, because I can't answer for Congress. I won't answer for Congress.
Sam, thanks for coming, and appreciate all
you do. I can't tell you how great it is to be back in Iowa. I cannot tell you.
Can you tell us with, you know, the invasion of President Trump's attorney, which is criminal, in my opinion, is there anyone that can defend the president? What's the president's alternatives in this situation? Is there any hope for him? How can he survive this?
Well, I do think that the issue is that I think sooner or later, you know, the truth will come out. I mean, this whole Russia thing, there's nothing there. If you notice, none of the charges have had anything to do with the election. They're not related to that at all. They've been related to other issues. So I can only speak on what I know and what I say. And again, I'm uncomfortable commenting on the investigations itself and how all that goes, because I'm still, you know, I still have to pay a lawyer, which sucks, by the way. But I'm still there. I mean, and so I can't say much, and I can't, I'm sorry I can't. I'm sorry I can't. If we were in another venue, and a couple of my friends weren't in this room, I might be a little bit more forthcoming.
But do you think there's hope that he'll?
I always have hope. Well, I would just say this: we had a conference call yesterday of our we have kept the National Advisory Committee for agricultural and rural issues together. We have about 80 of the most prominent agriculture people in the country that are part of that group. We had a conference call yesterday, and we were expecting a lot of pushback and a lot of irritation and angst over where we are. Absolutely 100% support of the president. They get it. The people get it. That's something that I'm telling you, I can't tell you. Well, you see me. I can't tell you how many news anchors I've talked to on air and off air about this. And I said, you still don't get it. And you won't get it until you go to a Trump rally. When you go to a Trump rally, it hits you the moment you walk in the door. Look at most of us, white middle-aged Republicans, right? Young, we have some exceptions. Some you're a couple of standard deviations out. But you go to a Trump rally, oh my God. I would say it's one of the most energetic, enthusiastic, and diverse groups of people you'll ever see. And I've been in auditoriums with 30,000 people and just rocked the house. I stood this far away from Donald Trump on a stage after I've introduced him, and he could not hear each other talk. That's how loud it gets. And it fills you. It just fills you with energy. And that's why I knew we were going to win.
It seems like he can rise above it all.
Oh, yeah. He's a phenomenal individual. He is fun. Yes, sir. Over here.
Trade with China. I work in agriculture.
Well, here's the thing. It's a big concern. I would ask you to think about and do a little research on the person who is the President of the United States. Read one of his books. Get a sense of who he is and how he thinks. And think about what we've already seen happen just with this notion that we're going to go out here and we propose these tariffs, okay? They're not in place, they've just been proposed. And already we've seen some movement. And I think the people need to be calm. It's hard, I know it's hard. But I think they also need to be patient because he's not going to sell the country down the river. He's not. And here right now we have a $19 trillion GDP, okay? So if we have a $700 billion trade imbalance, okay, $700 billion, that runs about 3 or 4% of the GDP. Well, as you know, when you calculate GDP, that negative number is what is subtracted from the GDP. Now, let's change that trade balance by $200 or $300 billion. 2% change, let's say 2%. 2% of GDP change. Well, that money doesn't go away. That money doubles because it's taken off of that end and it's added to the front end of the GDP in consumption. So we gain almost 4% by changing our trade imbalance 2%. How much more revenue is that for the government? How much more consumption is that? How many more jobs does that create? That's the impact of that massive trade imbalance. And that's what we're trying to fix. You know, a lot of people talk about the fact that, you know, that we're about to enter a trade war. Well, I would say that we've probably been in a trade war for 40 years. And we're just mounting our counterattack. So I think that this is the issue that we're starting to look at. Right here. Yes, sir. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, this is normal. I mean, I don't know why people are so excited about this. Well, you have to understand the dynamics of what happens when people come to work in government. So you show up, here we are, we show up, transition, we have the entirety of the Trump campaign team, okay, probably gets called to come in and work on transition. Well, the entirety of the Trump campaign may have been 300 people. Maybe. Well, there's only 4,000 jobs that have to be filled. So where are you going to get those people? Well, those 4,000 jobs are going to get filled by people who have been usually in government before, or they're going to get pushed. I was sitting in Johnny DiStefano's office. Johnny runs the personnel office for the White House. I was sitting in his office one day talking to him, and in the course of a half hour, he received calls from Newt Gingrich, Bob Dole, Howard Baker, or not, wasn't Howard Baker, it was, but put two or three other retired prominent Republicans, and every one of them pushing a package of people to get placed in various. So Johnny's job really sucks. And because you're going to take input, and like Haley Barbour calls it, I want to put these people in these places. Well, those people expect you to do that. Well, Heritage Foundation, they'll have a folder with 4,000 names in it. They're the ones with all the resumes. So people get placed into government and that may or may not be suited for it in different places. And then they get to have bosses and all this other. So the and plus, there are a lot of jobs in government that will rob you of your soul because they will grind you into the dirt. You work 16, 18 hours a day, 7 days a week, and you never get away from it. So this turnover issue is a real issue, but it's a real issue for every administration. It's just that because of the personality of our president, a lot of people equate that as being chaotic. I don't think he's chaotic at all, but I also think that that's what gets reported. Because the problem we have is the press keeps trying to put him into the same mold as a Mitt Romney or a Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton or a Ronald Reagan or a George H.W. Bush. They say every that's what every president ought to be like. Well, he is not like any of them. Thank God. Yeah.
The last campaign discussed about getting rid of certain departments like energy, education, EPA. Did anything happen to them?
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say we'll get rid of them. But believe it or not, there's legislation that's being introduced that we might move them. Now imagine the Department of Interior in Denver, the Department of Agriculture in Des Moines. I'm going to start the rumor today. So.
Bring them down.
Because what happens? We move them out of Washington. We move the, quote, deep state's not there. We hire good Midwesterners to work and do the work there. Now, there is some talk of that, but I will tell you, that's hard. It's hard to do. And a lot of reason it's hard to do is because Congress has they have a grip on that. And whether you like it or not, it's what the Constitution says. And, you know, I still carry a copy of the Constitution in my pocket. So how many of you got yours? I know Tammy does. So, yeah. Yes.
Where's your office at?
My office, it is so, so egregious. It is so big. It is so big I have two chandeliers, not one. My office is in the Whitten Building, which is on Jefferson Drive, which faces the mall. And I could go out, Brad Zahn and I could go out and hit a bucket of balls to the Washington Monument from right in front of my office. My office is the American flag in front of the Whitten Building is framed in my window. My office is big enough to play handball in. I'm not kidding. Can I tell a quick story? No. I love telling stories. So my alumni, I went to the Air Force Academy, and my alumni magazine, Checkpoints, they'd been after me for a year to do a profile because of my work on the campaign. So after the inauguration, I got another inquiry from them, and I sent Hope Hicks a note, and I said, Hope, can I talk to my alumni magazine? And she wrote back, said, sure, we won, you can talk to whoever you want. So, you know, So they came in and they did about a 90-minute video and an interview of, and it was wonderful. It was wonderful. And then they put out about a 6-minute trailer on the website to introduce, and they did. They did great research. They had me on television and campaign spots and a lot of other issues. It was really nice. But the last shot was me sitting at my desk and typical, you know, the suspenders and the shirt sleeves rolled up. I mean, most of you know that's my signature, and that's so I was sitting at my desk and they panned back from my desk and you could see the beautiful mall and the flag and everything panning back, and it was really, so I sent it to my wife. I was so proud of this trailer. And what do you think her response was? So, that's your office? Not, hey honey, that was great. Oh, they did a wonderful job. So, I'm an American taxpayer, read between the lines. That's your office? Yes, it is. Yes, sir. We're not going to give it away, Tom. We're not going to give it away. Great to see you, by the way. It's wonderful to see you. Great to see you. Tom Doerr, former Undersecretary at the Department of Agriculture. So great to have him here. Great to see him. He's been a great friend and mentor. There's a guy who knows where all the bodies are buried in the building. So I will say this. One of the best things that has happened. There are very few perks for being working in government when you're at that level that I am. I'm very blessed. But one of those perks is parking. So I get to park right in front of the Whitten building on the apron. We call it the apron. So today, I want you to know there are only 2 pickups parked in front of the Department of Agriculture on a daily basis. Ford F-150 and a Chevy pickup. One has Plymouth County plates on it, and the other one is Bill Northey's, and so the two of us, the only 2 people appointed there that have pickups, and both of them are parked in front of that building, and I am so proud of the fact that we have Iowa plates on pickups in front of the Whitten building. I'm glad I have a parking spot. If you ever tried to park an F-150 anywhere in Washington, I swear to God. It's incredible. Yes, sir. Hey, Monty, how are you? You have never been bashful about sending me emails, so just send me another email and I'll make sure it gets to the right people. This issue is totally different issue, and as you know, and Imani, you and I've talked about this a great deal, and right now there's a bare knuckle fist fight going on over the RFS, and there's a lot of tension there, and a lot of tension in our own party inside the Senate, and so this has been a real challenge for us. The challenge that we have at the Department of Agriculture is that we have input, but we don't have authority. So the conversations that I have with Monty and others who have interest in RFS and ethanol is that we say, okay, we have to be, and we do, because we're all Iowa people. We're supporter of agriculture, and we get it. But we can only go so far. And the fact that they even answer our calls or take our calls is usually on it. That's a good day for us. Because they don't have to, Monty, and you know that. But we try very hard, to make sure that we support and defend those. The thing about trade is that agriculture is always on the front end. It is the first thing, because we trade everywhere in the world. Now, we'll say this. One of the phenomena we're seeing already is all of our produce that was in ports in Seattle and Portland and places getting ready to ship to the Pacific Rim are now on trains headed to Galveston and New Orleans to be shipped to Europe. So the stuff's being bought, and it's going to get bought. But it's just a matter of where. And I think that, we see it immediately because you can go out and see. Let's take a country decides to cancel a grain purchase, and will it affect the price by 50 cents a bushel? It can happen just like that, and we've seen it. We saw it during back in 2015. The Chinese canceled a major corn purchase, and our corn prices went down 48 cents a bushel. Well, guess who came in and bought the corn? The Chinese. They did it on purpose. These are the kinds of things that happen when you have that kind of volume and you have the single purchaser out there. They can affect the price, and then they can go out here and make sure that they get the price they really want by affecting the markets that dramatically. So those are the things that we're trying to overcome. But the intellectual property issue is a huge issue. We don't get very many fair breaks in trade with China, and we're trying to fix that. So, and we're not going to sit here and spill the beans on what we're going to do, but I have confidence in the president. I have confidence in Larry Kudlow. I have confidence in John Lighthizer. I have confidence in Secretary Ross. These people will get us through this, and we're going to be better off coming out of it. I just know we will. Agriculture, we'll make it. We're going to make it. I'm more worried about low commodity prices than I am almost anything else. I mean, we're sitting here looking at, $4 corn and $10 beans. And a couple of years ago, it was quite a bit different. So I worry about that because cash rents haven't gone down. Input costs haven't gone down. They've gone up. So the margins are very much smaller today. We need to work on that. Yes, sir. Secretary Perdue has been a lot nicer to me than Secretary Vilsack has. I have an Iowa flag in my office, and it was Vilsack's flag, so I'll tell you what I think. He left it, and I took it.
So you're saying he's not Iowa nice?
I'm not going to comment on that. I just know that that Secretary Perdue treats me a lot nicer than Secretary Vilsack has. So
I can't imagine that the presence of Terry Branstad in China hasn't been somewhat helpful in this whole process. Can you expound on that at all?
No, I think first off, it was a strategic hire, and it was a great one because of the personal relationship that Governor, now Ambassador Branstad, has with the President of China. That's one of the reasons I think we'll pull out of this in good shape. Because I know Ambassador Branstad is working very hard behind the scenes to make sure that we get this done and done right. Now, there's going to be some give and take, and there always is, but we're going to get a good deal. Because I have confidence in the guy making the deal. I do. Yes, sir?
Is China the only transgressor of
No.
Intellectual property?
No. They're all over. But we do the most business with them. And their rules are that you go over there, you turn over your intellectual property. Not everybody's like that.
There are others that
steal it. Literally steal it. When you go in and you bootleg a copy of a movie, you're stealing intellectual property. And that's one of the great challenges we have now with the production of art, with music and movies, anything that's put on video, anything that's digitized, can be stolen. And generally it is. So these are big challenges for us. Tamara. The Department of Education has responsibility for 4-H, and so if you really want to have impact, then you need to get hold of Secretary DeVos and her staff, because the Department of Agriculture manages the FFA, and the Department of Education does 4-H.
I think the umbrella of USDA and agriculture.
Department of Education.
Thank you, Sam.
You bet. Not that I'm passing the buck, but that's... If you really, this is the issue. This is a lot of times people will come to us with issues, and we really don't have any authority other than to direct people to the right place. So, and by the way, 4-H is it's an independent organization, 7 million kids involved, and I think that calling the 4-H headquarters is not out of line. So, And I know that, you know, the executive director there, she's wonderful. She's a tremendous, her heart's in the right place. So this is coming from probably somewhere else, and I'm not going to comment on it, but I'm just telling you where you need to probably direct your comments. So.
Thanks, Sam.
You bet. Yes, sir. Yeah, hi, Tammy.
Hi, Sam. Glad to see you.
Good seeing you.
I just would love your take on the 18
election. Oh, man. I'm trying to formulate an answer. It's not going to get me in trouble. No, well, yeah, that's probably the best way to go. I think there are going to be some challenges for us, but every race is a local race. Every race is a local race. If you have a good candidates and good agenda and good platform, you're going to win. You're going to win. Yeah, so... Better candidates win. Money. One last question. God, that time went fast. One more question. I will answer this. I didn't get the question, but I'll answer it. Yes, Melania is as beautiful as she appears. In fact, I'm banned from speaking about her in my house. The other issue is I used to send pictures and... every time I go to Mar-a-Lago, I'd get to stay in a different room. I'd get to stay in the Russian room or the French room or the Sunshine room or the Sunset room. And so my wife said, I'm sick and tired, of course, in the winter, said, I'm sick and tired of hearing about your stays at Mar-a-Lago. So whenever she asks, where are you now? I say, well, I'm staying at the Super 8 by the airport. Thanks for having me here today. It's great to see you all. Thank you.